Welcome to Gemara Marking. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Ayin Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to Option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins, you'll find in the middle of Ayin Beis, there is a Mishnah in the middle, the second of the lines after the end of the narrow lines. Before we begin the actual text, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the Nosei. It describes a woman who overs al, she violates Das Moshe and Das Yehudis. She violates these two areas of halacha and what they are, so we will see in the course of the Mishnah and the Gemara what exactly is being referred to. But the woman who does violate these, the Mishnah will tell us that she is divorced and she will not receive her ksuba payment. So now the Gemara. The Mishnah says, Ve'elu yotzos shelo b'ksuba. The following are divorced without receiving the ksuba payment. Hoiveres al das Moshe v'Yehudis. Rashi, das Yehudis, shenuhagu b'nois Yisrael, practices adopted by the women of Israel, v'afagav delok siva, even though they are not written, they're not found in psukim. You can see we have a double underlining to highlight the two categories. V'ezohi das Moshe. What is meant by that? What's included in that category called the laws of Moshe? Machiloso shena musar. A wife who feeds her husband food that has not been tithed. Umeshamashto nida. And she conducts intimacy with him as a nida, as a menstruant woman, which is strictly forbidden. Velo kitza lo chala, and she doesn't separate the dough tithe from bread that she bakes. The dough tithe is called chala. Venoderes v'eino mekayemas, she vows and does not fulfill her vows. These examples are in fact written in the Torah. These are Torah-based laws, and she violates them. V'ezo, and of course, in violating them, she causes him to inadvertently sin. V'ezo, he das Yehudis, what is meant by that? Yoitza v'roisha parua, she goes out with her hair uncovered. V'toiva b'shuk, she spins wool in the market. And she converses with all kinds of people. So too is one who curses a person's, her husband's parents in his presence. Rabbi Tarfon Omer Af Hakolanis. So too is a woman whose voice or sounds are heard. Vezui kolanis, what is meant by being heard? L'chshi medaberes besoch beisa, when she converses in her house. U'shcheinao shoymin koila, and the neighbors are able to hear her. That's as far as the Mishnah is concerned. The Gemara will have what to add to many of these points. The Gemara. Machiloso she'eno mu'usar, she feeds him food that hasn't been tithed. Heichi Domi, and we have a diamond marking that you can see repeats itself on the page. On the side under our Nosei Mivne heading, the diamond highlights the expression of the question Heichi Domi. means in what are the circumstances? How is this to be understood? Alma medubar b'mikrim shi'oiveres al das Moshe. What are we talking about when we say in these cases that she is in violation of the Das Moshe? And the squiggle underline comes to highlight the answer. Lo tzricha means it needs to be taught, and those are answers to the question. So now the Gemara. Echidami, what does it mean she feeds him untithed produce? E diyoda, if the husband is aware of it, nifrosh. So he should separate himself from it. He should not eat it. E delo yoda, if he is unaware, mino yoda. So how does he know about it in order to use that as grounds for divorcing the wife? Lo tzricho, no, it is necessary to be taught. De omro le, she tells her husband, ploni kain tikain li is a kri. So and so by name a kohen came and tithed the kri, the pile of grain. The ozil shaile, and the husband went and asked the kohen, vishtakach shikra, and it turned out that what she said was a lie. So that is how he knows, and as a result of her claiming that it was tithed, so he ended up eating untithed stuff. Umeshamashto nida, hechidomi, what does it mean that she has relations, she has intimacy with him, wala nida, idi yodabo nifrosh, if he is aware of her being in the nida state, so he should stay away from her, not have relations with her. Idalo yoda, if he himself doesn't know her to be in a state of defilement, in a state of nida, well, nismoch iluya, he then should rely on her, that if she's presenting herself for intimacy, and it's indication that she's not defiled, that she is not a nida. The Amar Rabbi Chanino Bar Kana Amar Shmuel, minayin lenida should sefer es l'asma, from where do we know that a nida is trusted to count the necessary days that lead up to her purification on her own, that she's believed on her own. Shenemar v'safra lo shivas yomim. The pasuk in the context of the woman's defilement says she counts 7 days, and that is the period of time that a woman on the Torah, from the Torah perspective, is considered a nida. So that the pasuk made reference to her own counting. Law equals li'atzma. So why shouldn't the husband rely on her? Lo tzricha, the case of the Mishnah that describes the mishamoshto nida as a violator of Das Moshe is the following. Di omrole ploni chocham tiher li es hadam. She says that so and so, and names a sage, a rabbi, that viewed a flow that came forth from her body, and the rabbi, having a tradition on the matter, ruled that she is tahora, that she is not defiled. Only specific kinds of emissions from the woman's body cause defilement, not everything that is emitted. And the rabbi ruled, she claims, that I am tahora. The ozel shaile, and the husband went and asked the chocham, the wise man, the sage, the rabbi, and vishtakach shikrin, it turned out that it was all a lie. The iboy esema, kid Rav Yehuna, another approach to explaining this idea of mishamashto nida is in line with Rav Yehuda's teaching. Diom Rav Yehuda, huchsuka nida b'shcheino seha, if a woman was seen by the neighbors wearing clothing that she wears only when she is a nida. We had reference to this earlier in the Masechta. The Gemara had spoken about a woman deserving her worn out clothing. Those are the clothing she would wear when she is a nida. So there's this concept of clothing that are particular, that are earmarked for the nida period. And she was seen wearing those clothing, and she had told her husband that she is tahora. Bala loike aleha mishum nida. The husband, if he was warned not to be with her, and was, he will be subject to lashing because of this. Now, let's take a look at Rashi, because we still have some loose ends. Rashi says, Huchsuka nida v'shcheinoseh, sheruah loveshes bigdei nidus. She was seen wearing the nida clothing. Ulebayla amra tayrani v'shimshani. And she told her husband, I am allowed, I am permitted, I am not defiled. Ba'ala loike im hisrubo. If he was warned, let us say, hey, you know, we saw your wife wearing these nida clothing, you shouldn't be with her, and he didn't listen, he would be subject to malchus. V'chi hai gavna mishkachas lamas nisin. And in order to understand the Mishnah, it's as follows. De'le'achar tashmish. After he had intimacy with his wife, thinking that she was allowed, hodi'uhu shcheinosav shehuchsuka nida. He was informed by her neighbors that she was seen wearing the nida clothing, establishing her as a nida. And hence, he then understood that when he had relations with her, she was actually off limits. If he's aware that the bread that he is eating is untithed, so then Nifroshi should stay away from it. If he doesn't know about it, how can he know that she is feeding him untithed baked products? Lo tsricha, the omrole. What happened here is that she told her husband, Ploni Gabal Tikun Liasi Isa. Gabal is a person who kneads dough. So she says, so-and-so, the kneader, he separated the challah tithe from the dough. The Ozel Shaile, and the husband went and asked him. The Ishtakach Shikun, it turned out that it was a lie. V'noideres v'eino mekayemes. A woman who vows and doesn't fulfill her vows, she's a violator of Das Moshe, and on that basis, a man can divorce the wife, and she won't get the ksuba. The Omar Mar, and here the Gemara gives background, what's the problem with this? I would say that, like, up till now, each one of the offenses of which she was guilty are things that affect him. Here, you might ask, how is he affected by the fact that she vows and doesn't fulfill it? On what basis is he going to divorce her and not pay the ksuba? How is he affected by that? Well, here the Gemara answers. De Omar Mor, it has been taught, because of the sin of vowing and not fulfilling, one's children die. Shenemar, we'll see two sources for this idea. The Pasuk says, Al titein es picha lachti es bisorecha. And the continuation of the Pasuk, we wrote in between the lines, V'chibel es ma'ise yodecha. The Pasuk is saying, don't allow your mouth to be the source of sin to your flesh, nor the basis of injury and ruination of one's ma'ase yodecha. V'ezu hein ma'ise yodev shalom. What is meant by that, by a man's production? Maisi Adayim would mean a man's work production. What is meant by that? Hevi Omer, Bonov Uvenoisov. That's a reference to one's children. So when you look at the verse, it's saying don't allow your mouth, namely false oaths, false vowing, to ruin your children. The Maisa Yodecha. Rav Nachman Omer Mehocha. From the following, you see this idea. Lashov hikesi es b'nechem. Lashov, in this pasuk, means al iske shov. The word shov is associated with falsehood, with false vows, where a person vows whatever and doesn't fulfill the vows. That's considered in the realm of shov. So as a result of shov, the pasuk says, hikesi es b'nechem, I afflicted your children. The Tanya, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Yodea B'Ishto Shonoderes V'Eino Mekayemes. Anyone who is aware of his wife as being a one who vows and doesn't fulfill the vows. As we go on in the reading note, we're going to skip a bracketed section momentarily because of the inaccuracy of the contents. Yachzor V'Yaknitena Kedei Shetidor B'Fonav V'Yofer Lo. The husband should arouse her emotions. Literally, it would mean to irritate her, yaknitena, to incite her. And when she becomes incited, so she'll vow, which is characteristic of people that are enraged, and she'll vow in his presence, the Yofer law, and he will then absolve, he will void or absolve her of that vow. Let's go over the bracketed section. We said that a one who is aware of his wife as being one who vows and doesn't fulfill them, yachzor v'yadireno, he should go and impose upon her a vow. Yadireno b'may mesakin lo, by imposing upon her a vow, the word yadireno, Rashi says, mashma be'atzmo kinem olayach dover ploni, that by that he's saying that such and such a thing should be forbidden to you. That's what the yadireno means. So how does imposing a prohibition on his wife, how does that solve the problem? But my misakin law, how does that help? How does that fix things? Elo yachzor v'yakniteno, rather what the husband should do is to irritate her, to incite her, kadesh tidor befonav, so that she will vow in his presence, v'yofer lo, and upon hearing the vow, he will then absolve it. And hence, there's nothing for her to violate. Omru lo, the rabbis responded to Rabbi Meir, ein odom dor im nochosh bekfifa. According to Rabbi Meir, there was a solution for the vowing type woman, and that was, as we saw, have her vow in his presence, he'll annul it, and with that he doesn't have to divorce her. That was Rabbi Meir's idea. It's a solution to avoid divorcing her. The Chachomim said, how do you expect a man to live 24/7 with a woman that's a vowing type character? And Rashi adds, by the way, the translation is, a man does not live with a snake in the same basket. Rashi says, "Bekfifa besof sal echad shekshelo yishomer." When a person doesn't guard himself, yishochenu, the snake will bite him. Af ze yovolide shetilkalkalenu. So to a vowing woman, eventually it's very hard to be on guard of this all the time, and eventually she's going to mess him up with the vows. We continue with a second source that deals with a woman that doesn't tithe the challah tithe, and Rabbi Yehuda offers a solution so as to avoid their divorcing, and the Rabbanan will respond just like we saw here with the vowing type woman, that you can't rely on the solution. Tanya Horio Rebbe Yehuda Omer Kol Hayodea Beishto She'ena Koitzo Loi Chala. Any man who is aware that his wife on a regular basis does not tithe the dough tithe, the chala tithe, Yachzor V'Yafrish Acharel. So the husband should himself do the tithing, and well, that will solve the problem. He won't end up eating untithed baked goods. Omru lo, the rabbi said to Rabbi Yehuda, "Ein odom dor im nochosh bekvifa." It's very hard for a person to dwell with a snake in a basket. In other words, living with a woman like this is very difficult, and therefore you can't rely on the solution. There's going to be a mess up somewhere along the way, and he'll end up eating untithed baked goods. Man demasni law aha, Rabbi Yehuda, who teaches the solution idea, in other words, the method of avoiding a divorce regarding challah, regarding the dough tithing, kol shekein ahach, he, that's Rabbi Yehuda, would certainly accept the solution suggested by Rabbi Meir in the case of the woman who vows. Avoman demasni ahach. However, Rabbi Meir, who suggests that there is a solution for the case of the vowing, aval ha, but with the case of the bread, with the baking, zimnin de mikri v'ochil, it's an almost daily situation. People would bake bread, fresh bread every day. very constant, regular issue. This is in contrast with vows. People don't vow on a regular basis. So that Rebbe Meir will tell you that for something that's unusual, so there's a solution. But something that you have to live with day in and day out, to rely on the husband remembering each time to tithe, is expecting too much. And therefore, Rebbe Meir might suggest a solution for the vowing type woman, but he wouldn't necessarily accept the position of Rebbe Yehuda when it comes to the issue of the dough tithing. V'ezuhi das Yehudis, Yoitza v'roisha parua. Now what we learned Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi said that das Yehudis is a reference to practices, customs of Jewish women, even though they're not written, implying that even though they're not Torah-based. So the Mishnah mentioned amongst the list of things that are Das Yehudis is a woman who goes outside with her hair exposed. So the Gemara asks, Rosha Parua De'oraisa hi. How is it that the Mishnah classifies Rosha Parua, exposed hair, as a violation of a Jewish female custom, when it is a Torah-based problem or Torah-based violation, not just Das Yehudis? If you want to call it something, call it Das Moshe, but don't call it Das Yehudis. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Ufora es rosh ha'isha." The pasuk is found in the context of a sota, a woman who is suspected of immorality. She's brought to the Beis HaMikdash and an entire ritual is performed, and part of the ritual is this married woman who is suspect of immorality. It says, and her hair is revealed. Her head is uncovered, meaning revealing her hair. Which shows us that prior to the proactive behavior of the people in the Beis HaMikdash when processing the sota woman, she came with her hair covered. A married woman has her hair covered. The Tana of the Beir of Yishmael, Azhar of Nois Yisrael, Shalei Yetzu Befrua Rosh, and the Tanaic source from the Yeshiva, Rabbi Shmuel, tells us that this Upora Rosh, Ufora es Rosh Isha, is the source, the negative command. It's an Azhara, meaning you have a negative command regarding Jewish women. Shelo Yetzu Frurosh, they shall not go outdoors with exposed hair. So, once again, the question is, why does the Mishnah say Rosh HaParua is a violation of Das Yehudis when Rosh HaParua is a Das Moshe, a Torah-level, scripturally-based violation? The Gemara explains, it answers, Doraisa Kalsa Shapir Domi. Das Yehud, we're at the top of Omid Beis, Kalsa Shapir Domi, Das Yehudis Afilu Kalsa Nami Oser. This Gemara is very terse, but we'll try to explain. Before we explain in the text, glance at the side. We have a crude diagram. I do admit that this falls a bit short of Da Vinci's artwork, but it should suffice for our purposes. There is a vessel called a kalsa. It's a vessel that is used for it's used by women primarily that are involved with with spinning wool. It's a type of basket that has a base to it, a concave base that could be placed over one's head. So it has what's called a base kibble, so that a woman, if she were, let us say, to walk outside with this a basket apparatus on her head. Is her hair covered? Yes. That is what the Gemara means when it says Doraisa, to fulfill the Torah level requirement of having one's hair covered. If she were to have it covered with this basket arrangement, Shapir Domi, the Gemara says at the top. That's okay. Das Yehudis, however, the custom of Jewish women is not to walk outdoors with the kalsa on their heads. Therefore, afilu kalsa nami osur. That is not in conformity to Jewish custom. And therefore, if she's in violation of, if that's how his wife walks out with a kalsa on her head, the Mishnah will tell you that she's yoytza shelo v'ksuba. She's a violator of Das Yehudis. Omar Rabbi Asi Omar Rabbi Yochanan Kalsa Ein Bo Mishum Porua Rosh. He says that the basket Kalsa covering is sufficient so that the woman is not in violation of Porua Rosh, of having an exposed head of hair. In other words, that this is kehalocha. It's acceptable. It's legitimate. Havi ba, the word havi means a question is raised. Havi ba Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera asks, Hecha. The triangles that you see are explained on the side under the Nosei Mivneh heading, Shlavim Levar Efo Shayach Dino Shir Rabbi Yochanan. Where does Rabbi Yochanan's law apply? The Kalsa Ein Ba Mishum Porosh. So the Gemara is investigating. Havi ba Rabbi Zera, Hecha. Rabbi Zera asks, where does Rabbi Yochanan's rule apply? If you say that it's a fulfillment of halacha for a woman to walk out into the public marketplace with a kalsa on her head. That's not true. Das Yehudis he. She would be in violation of Das Yehudis of unconformity to Jewish custom. So Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't say kalsa ba mishum puru rosh, indicating that it is kehalacha, that it's proper. V'yelo b'chotzer. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan says that the kalsa is considered sufficient covering for the woman to walk around in a courtyard. Courtyard is an enclosed area surrounding which houses open into. Houses open into a courtyard. So maybe what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that the kalsa is considered a fulfillment of the requirement of having one's hair covered in a chotzer. The Gemara says, you know something? When you're in a chotzer, when a woman is in a chotzer, she doesn't need to have her hair covered at all. Im kain lo hinachto bas lavrom avinu sheyoshevet tachas baila. Means if you're going to insist on the woman having her hair covered, even in the chotzer, you're creating an extremely strained, almost intolerable lifestyle imposed on a woman. How can she be a married woman living with such restrictions? So the Tosfos at the second Tosfos from the top says, the veil of a chotzer, pirush, afilu, below kalsa nami, even without a kalsa, ain bo mishum prias rosh, there's no violation of exposed hair. She'i lo kain, if you're not going to say thusly, lo hinachta bas avram avinu, then you're not enabling her to live a life. Omar Abaye. Now we just have to just on this point of the kalsa is in the chotzer. And Rashi says on the second line from the top, im kein de bechotzer yesh bo mishum priya. If you're going to say that the wearing of the kalsa in the chotzer is a violation of exposed hair, that would be too much to expect from her. So Rashi's approach seems to suggest that the woman's hair in the chotzer should be covered, and it's sufficient. It would be sufficient with a kalsa. However, on second thought, the Gemara is looking for a case of where the kalsa is considered a fulfillment of the halacha, and when the Gemara is saying, rejecting the chotzer, it's suggesting to us that in a chotzer she doesn't even need it. And as that's what we saw in the Tosfos, which I think is fairly clear on that point. Afilu below kalsanami, even without the kalsa, she's not in violation of exposed hair when in the chotzer. Omar Abaye, v'itei morav kana, mei chotzer lichotzer v'derech movui. The kalsa is considered a sufficient method of hair covering when hair covering is necessary. When you're dealing with a woman walking from one yard, one courtyard to another courtyard, through an alleyway. The mavui is an alleyway that connects courtyards with one another. And being that it's an area that Rashi says lo shlichi rabim, the public doesn't frequent a mavui, so the need for the formal customary Jewish woman hair covering is not necessary there. The kalsa is sufficient. So you can see we have, let's say, three levels. We have a woman in a public area. There, the woman is expected to cover her hair in conformity with the standard Jewish custom. We have a woman in an alleyway, walking from one courtyard to another. She has to cover her hair, but she doesn't need to use the formal customary method. A kalsa would be sufficient. And we have a woman in a more secluded, a more private area, a courtyard, that and certainly within her own house, that she doesn't even need a kalsa. V'toyve b'shuk, we saw the Mishnah describe as another example of Das Yehudis, a woman who spins wool in the market, in public. Om Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel, B'mariz Rosel Livnei Adam. The problem of spinning wool in public is that she exposes her arms. In other words, if she's wearing a dress with sleeves, the sleeves end up, she rolls up the sleeves, or in the process of spinning the wool, the sleeves move upwards, exposing her arms. Rav Chista Omar Avimi, B'tove. Now the next word, how to vocalize it, or vowelize it, depends on different commentaries. So Ravini says betoiva, one vowelization is verod keneged ponea. She spins wool, and the string that's formed by her spinning then descends between her legs. The word ponea here is a euphemism. It descends between her legs, and that can attract people's attention. They look at where the string is, and they notice parts of a woman, an area of a woman that one should certainly not gaze upon. There's another explanation. I think you can see this in the Tosfos at the top. In the name of the Rach, Tova Vered. Vered is a new vocalization. Instead of reading it Verod, we're reading Vered. And Vered is associated with redness. Tzemer Odoim Hi Toive. She's spinning red wool. She Yipol Al Poneo Mizariso Vizel Azus Metzach Uprisus. And while spinning red wool in public, there's a glow or a reflection of the red on her face. And this is improper for a woman to do in public. Continuing in the Gemara, Umedaberes im kol adam, Omar of Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, b'misachekes im bachurim. This idea of speaking with all people is not a reference to a woman that works at an information desk and she's speaking to everybody. That's not what Rav Yehuda in Omar Shmuel has in mind with regard to the Mishnah. But what is it then? It's a woman who maybe we can say engages in flirtation. She plays with young men. We're dealing, of course, with a married woman. What's a married woman doing playing with other young men? So that's a violation of Das Yehudis. Now the Gemara brings a story, an incident. Omar Rabo Bar Chana Zimno Chado. Once upon a time, Have Ko Azilno Basrei the Rav Ukva. I was following Rav Ukva. I was walking in back of him. Chazise Lahi Aravia the Have Yasva Koshadio Pilcha. And he noticed an Arab woman that was casting her spindle, v'tova vered or v'rod keneged poneha. She was doing what we described above, the spinning of the wool. Kevon de chazisinon, when she saw us, pesikte lepilcha, she stopped her spinning, shadise, pesikte lepilcha shadise, she tossed away, she threw her spindle. Omra li, and she said to me, Ulam, young man, havli pelech, bring me the spindle. Omar bo Rav Ukva milsa. Rav Ukva made a comment about her. My Omar bo, what did Rav Ukva say about her? Ravina Omar, toive beshuk Omar bo. Ravina says that Rav Ukva said, ah, what you just saw is an example of a toiva b'shuk, one of the of Das Yehudis violations, if it were a Jewish woman. In other words, this scenario, if it were a Jewish woman, she would be in violation of toiva b'shuk. Rabbonan Amri, the second opinion as to what Rav Ukva said about her, that she is a midaberesim kol odom, Omar Ba. That her behavior, throwing the spindle and then asking Rav Yehuda to go pick it up, that is an example of midaberesim kol adam, speaking with everybody. On the side of the Gemara, before we continue, we have a nosei topic heading, mekelelis yoldov v'fonov, a woman who engages in some form of cursing. Now, what do we mean? Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel b'mekaleles yoldov b'fnei moldov, which means you have a wife that curses yoldov, means the father of her husband, b'fnei moldov, in front of the children of her husband. V'simonech, and in order to remember that the word in the Mishnah that said Mekalelis Yoldov Bifanov, that Bifanov doesn't mean in front of the husband per se, but rather it's in front of the grandchildren. In order to remember this idea that, as Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel said, she curses her husband's father in the presence of her husband's children. So the grandchildren are hearing their grandfather cursed out by their mother. So in order to remember that, the Pasuk says regarding Yankev Avinu and his meeting with his grandchildren, he says, Ephraim u'Menashe k'ruvein v'shimoin yuli. That Ephraim and Asher, he's talking to his son Yosef, he says, your sons Ephraim and Asher, they are to me like my own sons. So you have a reference to a grandfather and grandchildren. Omar Rabba. The Omrole, Rabba's role is to explain Rebbe Yehuda. We saw Rebbe Yehuda quoting Shmuel. What is she saying when we say she curses out the grandfather in front of the grandchildren? What's she saying? So Rabba tells us the Omrole, she says, Nichle Arye Lesaba Beape Bray. Let a lion eat grandfather in front of the grandson. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Af HaKolanis, my Kolanis, what is meant by the Kolanis? Omar Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, B'mashmas Kulo Al Iske Tashmish. It's a woman that has no sense of no sense of shame of modesty in her speech. What do we mean by that? So Rashi says, Al iske tashmesh kishemadaber imo al iske oino, when the husband talks to his wife about their own intimacy, merivo imoi, she argues with him, umashmas lishchenov, and she's heard by the neighbors, v'hu bosh badover, and the husband is embarrassed by this. A second approach to what a kolanis is, b'masnisa tana, in a Tanaic source, the following is revealed, or is taught as far as what is a kolanis. B'mashmas b'chotzer zu v'nishma kolo b'chotzer acheres. Without Rashi, I think this would be very difficult to understand, but Rashi says, v'nishma kolo shetashmish koshelo v'tzayekis. It's a woman that has pain during the act of intimacy, so that when what's described here is a woman that they dwell in this chotzer, they have an apartment, they have a house that opens to courtyard A, and when they engage in their intimacy, the pain is expressed by her screams heard in a neighboring chotzer. The Gemara asks, according to this approach, what is kolanis, if it's to be understood like this brisa, if it's what is it doing here in our Mishnah? V'nisne gabi mumin b'masnisen. Later, there is a Mishnah that lists blemishes, physical blemishes. Why then is this not an example of a physical blemish? And truth be told, it would be it's a physical problem, and it belongs in a different section. Elo machvarto kidishonin meikora. It's therefore more accurate. Machvarto means more appropriate, or literally, chiver is white, something clean or pure. It means it's more accurate to teach like or answer what a kolanis is like the first approach. It's a woman who doesn't have any sense of shame and argues with her husband about these matters in a loud, vocal fashion. The Mishnah. Hamakadesh eso isha almanas she'ein oleo nidorim. V'nimtzu oleo nidorim. A man marries a woman. He Mekadesh is the first stage of marriage. He offers her money in exchange for her agreeing to marry him. And he stipulates, I'm marrying you on condition that you don't have vows. That you haven't taken vows. And v'nimtzu oleo nidorim, it turns out that she has vows. Eino mekudeshes. So the condition being that it was stipulated and the conditions were not met, she's not married. The next phrase is going to preoccupy quite a bit of Gemara. And the issue is, the next phrase, konsistam, is this a continuation of what we just read, or is it a totally separate clause of the Mishnah? So we're not going to dwell on this. We're just going to read the words and wait for the Gemara to deal with it. Konsistam, v'nimtzu oleo nidorim, a konsa has to do with the consummation of marriage, knisa l'chupa, and he did so stam, meaning without stipulating anything, and it turned out she had vows. V'nimtzu nidorim teitzei shelo b'ksuba. She can be divorced without providing her the ksuba. Al menas she'ein bo mumin. A man was mekadesh a woman on condition that she doesn't have blemishes. V'nimtzu bo mumin eino mekudeshes. And it turns out that she has blemishes, so the kiddushin does not take effect. Konsa stam v'nimtzu bo mumin teitzei shelo b'ksuba. He consummated the marriage with her without mentioning anything, and it turns out she has blemishes. She can be divorced without receiving a ksuba. I understand that this phrase konsistam again is unclear, and we said we have to wait for a further explanation. Kol hamumen poislin b'kehanim, poislin b'noshim. All physical blemishes that would render a kohen unfit for serving in the Beis HaMikdash would be considered of sufficient severity on a woman to warrant her being divorced. Rashi on the Mishnah already foreshadows the issue of the phrase konsustam. The Gemara Mefarish, Rashi says, the Gemara will explain, ikoi aresha, is it a continuation of the beginning of the Mishnah, hach de kitsho al tnai, where the initial marriage was with a stipulation, o milsa be'ape nafsha, or is it a separate clause? And as a separate clause, it really would reflect the case where the man was mekadesh her stam and konsus stam. When he married her, he didn't stipulate anything, and he took her in without verbalizing any stipulation. And that would be as a separate clause. And we note that this is going to be discussed further on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. You know, since there's a discussion that will start at, in other words, that this issue will become germane to the Gemara's discussion at the bottom of this Amud, and Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, and Ayin Gimel Amud Beis as well. So, stay tuned. The Gemara points out that this Mishnah is found also in Maseches Kiddushin. Utnan nami gabi Kiddushin ki hai gavna. And the question that is to be understood is, why do I have to have the same Mishnah repeated here in Ksubas and also in Maseches Kiddushin? So the Gemara answers, Hocha Ksubas itzdirichale. Here we're learning tractate Ksubos. So the Ksuba information in this Mishnah is of relevance to this tractate. And therefore, Tnan Kiddushin otu Ksubos. The Kiddushin aspect of the Mishnah is taught by the way, along with the Ksuba information. Hasam Kiddushim Itzdrichle, there in Maseches Kiddushin, so the Kiddushin aspect of the Mishnah is emphasized, and Tana Ksubas Otu Kiddushin, and the laws of Ksuba were taught along with the Kiddushin. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. That which we learned in the Mishnah, a man married a woman on condition that she had no nidorim. Hayim kol nidorim b'mashma. Does that include all kinds of vows? Me'achar shehibia hakpoda. Once he said, I don't want a woman with vows, maybe that includes all vows. O dafke nidorim misyomim. Gon elu sheish bohem inui nefesh. Or maybe when he says, I on condition that you don't have vows, it's a reference specifically to those kind of vows that would lead to inui nefesh, that would lead to personal deprivation or suffering. We turn to the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadok. Be'elu nidorim omru. We also must note that the Gemara later will be asking, just in another two, three lines, the Gemara will be asking, the comment now that we're about to learn in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, what is it going on? What part of the Mishnah is this coming to elucidate? So in the meantime, we have to just read the text as it is and understand that we'll connect it back to the Mishnah a little bit later. So Rabbi Yochanan, quoting Shmuel Yosef, talks about regarding which Nidorim have the Chachomim said what they said. And here they are, Shelo Tochal Bosar, a vow not to eat meat, Shelo Tishtei Yayin, the woman had vowed not to drink wine, V'Shelo Tiskashit B'Vigdei Tzivayinim, or she had vowed not to wear colorful clothing. Tanyo Nami Hochi. And we have a brisa that supports this. Be'elu nidorim omru, regarding which nidorim have the rabbis taught their laws. Tvarim sheyesh bohem inui nefesh. Those kind of vows that result in or lead to personal pain. Shelo tochal bosar, v'shelo tishtei yayin, v'shelo tiskashet bevigdei tzivoinim. Havi ba Rav Papa. Rav Papa asks, Ahei, Rabbi Yochanan's comment, what is it going on? Ilema Aresha. Notice the double underline is a method just of keeping track of the stages of analysis. So if you're going to think that Rabbi Yochanan is a reference to the Reisha, what happened in the Reisha of the Mishnah? In the Reisha of the Mishnah, the first part of Mishnah, a man married a woman, offered her kiddushin, offered her money, let's say, to marry, and explicitly stipulated on condition that you don't have vows. So if Rabbi Yochanan's teaching is referring to that, Kevon de Kokobid, Afilu call me Rinami, once he expresses his opposition, his concern that she have no vows, that would seem to include all kinds of vows that she has. She's a woman that's vow free. Not just these specific type vows. Elo Asefa. So approach number one is that Rabbi Yochanan is a reference to the Seifa. Now, Seifa, here Rashi is absolutely brilliant. Rashi, four lines from the bottom. Asefa v'kosovar, Seifa de Masnisen. The approach number one is then learning the Mishnah. If you recall, we paused in the Mishnah and said that phrase konsostam is possibly an independent clause. Hence, Rashi is saying that this approach taken by the Gemara, attaching Rabbi Yochanan as a commentary to that clause, shows that clause is milsa be'ape nafsha. It's a separate case. V'kidshostam v'konsostam komar. And that case is a man who offered marriage to a woman, did not explicitly stipulate anything regarding vows, and he then consummated the marriage without any stipulations. So Rabbi Yochanan is telling us that in a case like that, if he discovers that the woman has vowed not to eat meat, not to drink wine, not to wear colorful clothing, that would be grounds for her being divorced and not receiving a ksuba. Number two, we continue the more of Ashiyom le'olam ha'resha. The teaching of Rabbi Yochanan, in fact, is referring to a man who explicitly stipulated, I'm marrying you on condition you have no vows. However, umidi dekapti bo'inshi have kepede kepeda. Things that bother people in general are considered a source of concern to him, to the husband. Midi de lo kapti bo inshi, things that wouldn't bother people in general, lo havi kepede kepeda, his being upset with them would not be considered legitimate grounds of concern. So that when we asked before, once he stipulates it explicitly, doesn't that mean then he is including all kinds of vows? So the Gemara here is saying, not so. It might be in reality that all kinds of vows bother him, but the standard by which we say your expressed concern is of concern is only with things that would bother other people. If you're somewhat eccentric or somewhat sensitive, that is not enough grounds for telling us that the woman can be divorced and not receive a ksuba. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.